We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on hot topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Hey, it's me, Blippi, and this is my best friend, Mika.
Hi, I'm Mika, and this is our brand new podcast,
Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. The Blippi-mobile will take us to amazing places.
And we'll meet new friends along the way.
Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast, and I had the opportunity to talk to one of Hollywood's major icons, Michael B. Jordan. In our conversation, Michael shares the highs, the lows, and everything in between, offering a genuine glimpse into his world.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. People give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wake that ass up
early in the morning.
The Breakfast Club.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ MV Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are The Breakfast Club. We got a special guest in the building.
Yes, sir.
Cosmic Kev.
The legend.
Mayor. The mayor.
And you got somebody with you, Kev?
The mayor of Philadelphia.
The mayor of Philadelphia.
Exactly.
That's right. That's right.
The mayor
of Philadelphia. Call it right.
All right. Who you got with you, Kev?
I got my man, Rabu, from UIGI Social Club. This is my guy, life changer. You know what I mean? This is my dude.
Okay. What do you bring Rabu up here for, Kev? What does he provide?
What does he provide? He provides a lot of things. He provides financial stability for those who, you know, a lot of people, a lot of times, especially in the DJ community, and I'm going to use an example. The problem that I have with a lot of DJs, they don't even have life insurance.
Mm.
You know, they ride around. They got this, they got that. And when you're in the prime of your life, you don't think about these things. You get in the bag. Bag's coming, you know. And next thing you know, when the club stop, the party stop, you're not on the air, or if you're in the club and you're not even in the club anymore, you don't even have life insurance. The one thing that really bothers me is when one of the DJs, when they die or something like that, fish fries. I can't stand it.
Man, stop.
And it's not even just DJs.
Yeah, it's not.
Just to be clear.
I'm be honest with you. No. You, am I lying?
Oh, I thought it was a GoFundMe.
GoFundMe. Exactly.
No, I hate fish. No. Listen. Fish fries and GoFundMe.
Yeah.
But I'm saying at the same time, you'll see these dudes, and you know, and I'm not hating. They'll be blinked out. You keep looking at me like I'm talking about you or something.
I'm not.
Because you're good. I mean,
I'm all right. I know you're straight. I'm right out here. I think I'm okay.
Yeah, no, but I'm just speaking to people in general. They ride around. They, you know, they up, and then as soon as they die, they first thing to go fund me, and
that's
then
real.
They don't think about financial, you know, putting their own stuff in the ground
and the burden on your family.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's not fair to them. And the one thing about my guy here, he creates a lot of ways where you don't have to worry about. That put yourself in that situation, and that's what he does. And I will say he's changed my life. But we're gonna get to that. You know, mm-hmm. we're gonna definitely talk about that. You know,
Let's start with Kev. The beginning of Cosmic Kev and who Cosmic Kev is. Cosmic Kev, of course, you're a Philly legend, the mayor of Philly.
Yes.
Now, how did you get into DJing and starting in your journey? Because people don't understand what you, a lot of people don't might not know what you mean to this culture.
And the longevity of your career, too.
Man, if we start, the interview might be too long.
That's all right, we got a little bit of time.
Okay. Yeah, I know, because I know you guys are, you know, you guys are real busy. So what it was is, I started on my block. There was a guy up the street, and this is before it's, people were even scratching records. So this is how long ago this was. And I used to play the drums. I used to like, I used to be in a house and listen to the radio and play drums. And this guy up the street, he was, he had a pair of turntables. So I would go over there. He wasn't mixing. He would just play one record to the next.
Right.
And I started, you know, hanging out with him. His name was Brian. And then when I started, and I'm just trying to skim through it, you know, uh-huh. Then the evolution of Grandmaster Flash, Grand Wizard Theodore, the guys that was doing the scratching and all that, they started doing that. So then that grabbed my ear, and I wanted to kind of try to learn how to emulate that and get it perfected really well. Mm-hmm. Got into that, was doing that, because I come from a turntableless era. A turntables era is like a Jazzy Jeff. I'm just saying, using that name so you can kind of relate.
Jazzy Jeff.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, at that time, that was one of the things that you definitely had to do to really be on in Philly. Like, Philly, if you weren't doing those things, people didn't care. So I went through that phase, was doing that for a while, and I was doing mixtapes, but not the kind of mixtapes that you, Clue, or somebody else was doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was like more like block party tapes, house party
actual
tapes.
Scratching.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that type of thing. And doing that for a long time, and I never really took it serious to go from to making money. We were doing it to be fun. Like, we had an old crew, shout out to Grandmasters of Funk. That was my old crew. Okay. And we were doing it to have fun back then. So that phase, of course, phased out. You're going into the 90s. I started doing college radio. I got my first college radio gig, KDU, it's in Drexel University. I was doing that. I was doing another station called Boss 97. And those stations were out in Jersey. They were not in Philadelphia. Well, the one station was in Philadelphia, KDU. Shout out to my man Joe. So what happened was, I had relocated in Jersey for a sec. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine's name is Ahmed Khan. He kept telling me, yo, you need to get back, you know, get back on Philly radio. And this is like 90, going into 91. So I kept saying, well, man, I don't know. Da, 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 da. And what happened was, I said, okay, I'm going to try it. So then I went back, you know, I moved back to Philly because I was in Jersey for like 3 years. Went to Philly, got with Kobe Cove, and that was a fight.
Kobe Cove.
That was a fight. Like, we were clashing. He didn't want to give me a shot at first. But I definitely got shot, because eventually he did. And then I shot my man Lightfoot from Philadelphia Hair Company, because Lightfoot was the one that told him, yo, this guy's dope. Now, at this time, I'm making mixtapes. In 92, I'm making mixtapes. Like, I'm in it, but I'm making different. I'm not making the mixtapes I was making in the earlier years. Mm-hmm. So I'm in it. All I cared about was really getting on the radio, just so I can just say, my mixtape is out. I wasn't really trying to do the radio thing.
Right.
Just trying to just promote my mixtape. That's all I cared about. And it went from there. I was doing Kobe's rap show for like a half hour, 1 a.m. to 1:30 a.m. Nobody really heard me, you know. Mm-hmm. Coffee makers, people at the...
We've all been there.
Yeah, I know you know. So I was doing that. And eventually, to kind of speed it up, shout out. There's four people that's responsible for my success. That would be Helen Little.
Helen, salute to Helen. Right.
Helen Little.
She here.
Yeah, I bowed down. Like, right. Helen Little. I got to tell you a funny story about that. We're going to get to that in a second. Well, Helen Little, Kobe, Helen Little, Lightfoot, and Ken Johnson were really responsible for me getting to the level of success that I've had. Mm-hmm. So I definitely had to shout them out. So she was the one that elevated me to go from that 1 a.m. to 1:30 to 8 o'clock to, she put me on every night. But I wasn't full-time. I was just a mixer. And Ken was the one that put me on as a full-time air personality and, you know, DJ, you know, somewhat what you do and other people. So I got to definitely shout out to them. So that's kind of like the skim of what happened. And for me, the funny thing is, and when I was doing the mixtape, you know, back then the mixtapes were so competitive. Mm-hmm. I got to say this. Clue really had the mixtape game on smash.
Illuminati.
Hands down.
No, you don't understand. So I'm going to tell y'all this funny story. Mm-hmm. So mind you, now this is, we're like maybe 94, 95. Mm-hmm. Yeah, around that time. So Clue,
1995.
Of course.
That's our era.
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, my mixtapes are really buzzing in Philly, but then it's still, Clue's still like knocking everybody out the box. So I'm mad because I'm from the turntables era. Like, oh man, he's not scratching. I'm in that frame of mind. So I went to the store. It's this guy named Abdul, Uptown Flavor. Shout out to him. I don't know where he is.
Uptown Flavor.
Yeah.
Wow.
So he, I went in there and let's say if I would take in like 40 tapes. So I would come back like the following week and maybe 20 tapes in there. In Clue's section, he maybe have 3 tapes in there. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, yo, why y'all not pushing my stuff? Da, da, da. And then so I got a shout out to him. He gripped me up and come in the back of the store. And he's African. You know, you hate on him. You don't really, you hate him. You got to up your style. Like, he get the exclusive. He get exclusive, and you got to get your exclusives. Don't get mad because he get exclusive. Now, mind you, I'm mad. Like, oh, man, da, da, da. But I definitely got a shout out to him because he made me really look at what how the culture had changed.
Yeah.
So it made me up my position, and I was coming to New York. I was in all the studios in Philly. Like, I was just getting different stuff from different artists just to try to get myself in a more prominent position. But Clue, like I said, Clue really changed the game. Like, he changed the mixtape game.
Mm. So what did you do? Is that when you started the come-up show so you could have exclusive freestyle?
So let's get into that. So the show was Radioactive. That's the show that Kobe was doing. Kobe was doing Radioactive. That was the rap
show.
Was
that the Cave or something?
Who?
No, that wasn't. Okay, never mind.
Oh, you're talking about Batcave.
Batcave.
Shout out to P-Phone. Ruggedness. So Kobe had the show called Radioactive, right? That was the rap show. Mm-hmm. It's like your rap show that was in New York back then. Mm-hmm. So I was DJing on that show. Kobe had moved up in positioning. He had became like a music director and then an assistant program director. Then he moved up to the morning show. So once he moved up to the morning show, that left that spot open. So they said, well, you can't do the morning show and do the rap show. Somebody has to take it. So at that time, Helen Little, she had offered me Kobe's show, mm-hmm. which was, it was Radioactive, but we had to change the name. Shout out to my homie, partner in crime, QDZ.
QDZ, what up,
Let
Q?
Let me tell you, mm-hmm. QDZ, I always knew that he was a talent, but he was the one that he was really doing the hosting at the time, and I was doing the DJing, mm-hmm. doing the co-hosting. So then we started that, and that's when we started bringing up all the artists, like local artists and international artists, to come down and freestyle on the show. So that's how the whole freestyle thing came mm-hmm. about with me. Like, that's where it started, right there. I mean, not saying I didn't get other freestyles, because like I said, I was in the mixtape thing, but for us branding it and making it as big as I can, it started, that's where it started at, right there.
And there's really not an artist who came out of Philly who didn't come through that come-up show,
you
really?
Know what? The only artist that I can honestly say that has not did the come-up show freestyle is Lil Uzi.
Really?
Oh, okay.
He's the only one. He's
the only one.
Because, you know, Uzi, he took a different direction.
Yeah.
And, you know, at one time, there was like a little, disagreement between Uzi and
Diamond Cuts, right?
Me. Yeah. Yeah, it was like, you know, and we're past that. You know, nothing but love and appreciation for him, but he took a different direction. He wasn't your average Philadelphia artist that
right.
came up and burnt the booth down. He wasn't, like, he was different. And, you know, as you can see now, he's different, so. That's where, you know, pretty much, he's the only artist that hasn't really done a come-up show.
How did y'all navigate, like, the beefs in Philadelphia? Because the thing about Philly is them niggas can really rap, and they really will shoot you. So it's like when people like Gilly and Beanie and all of them really going at it, how does Cosmic Cab referee that? Because sometimes they would get mad at you.
But not only that, they go to the station and everybody knows what the station
is. And they
want to
air it out, and here you are on the interview.
So you want the real truth on that situation?
Please.
So the real truth on that situation, and I've talked about this 1,000 times, but, you know, I got to say this. It's always their side, your side, and the truth. I'm giving you the truth. So the whole thing, it wasn't planned out when State Property and Major Figures, that's what it was, Major.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That wasn't a beef that was planned. We never encourage people to beef. But anyway, young Chris and young Neve, who's part of State Property, at that time, you know, they were hot, you know, and so was Major Figures. So they wanted to come up and do a freestyle. I was like, yeah, come on, cool, no problem, because that's when Can't Stop, Won't Stop was crazy,
yep,
whatever. They come up, they just started going right at Major Figures, who's Gilly, Bump J, Spado. They just started, we didn't know they were going to do it. That's like if I get on this mic and I just say, F you, M you, like, where did this come from?
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
Like,
so, you know, they had, like, we didn't have no knowledge of knowing what was going on. Mm-hmm. So, of course, they was doing what they was doing, spin when they spit, and then when they got finished, you know, Gil and all of them called up after they left, and Gil like, yo, you gonna let them come up there and bomb on us and this and that? And we was like, no, we didn't let them do, we didn't know they were gonna do that, so by fair, we had to let them come back to respond. Because if we didn't, it would have looked like
you were taking sides.
Right. Taking sides. We were in a bad position. Mm-hmm.
At that time, Rockefeller was on fire, so it already looked like
right. So it all, you get what I'm saying.
What do they call that? Like the equal time or something?
Yeah, equal time something.
We do that with politics.
Because at that time, you know, people don't know this, and I mean, y'all might know, but originally, State Property was put together. Major Figures was supposed to sign to Rockefeller.
I heard that somewhere before.
This is not a shot. If Gil, Bump, Spade, and all them would have took that deal that they were offering at the time, mm-hmm, you probably would have never been a State Property.
Wow.
Yeah, because they were supposed to take the deal. Mm-hmm. For whatever contractual reasons it didn't work, they didn't take the deal. And they sat it out, and then they put State Property together. So, of course, you can see it's a little animosity there.
Right.
Boom. When I didn't know that they had a problem. I didn't know that, nor did QDZ. So when they, after that happened, of course, we had to let them come back to respond. And then after they responded, someone from State Property got murdered. So, you know, we don't, from the jump, we never really like doing the beef. But we at that time, it was like, damn, we don't let them come back. They're going to think. Mm-hmm. So that's the only reason why we did it. Like, now, beefing in Philadelphia has been around for centuries. Like, there's a lot of crews that beef that we don't let them come up and do it on our show at the time when QDZ was doing the show. But you asked me how do we handle it. I just don't allow it. Like, mm-hmm, I don't, if you... you're not coming up on my platform, bro. I can't do it. Like, and it's not because of the situation that transpired. It's more of, I don't want anybody in my city having problems with each other. I just don't condone that in no way, shape, or fashion.
I was going to ask, what you know, for a lot of DJs, they don't have longevity, right? There's a handful of them that's been as hot as, you know, 94 as they are now. So how would you tell a DJ, how do you continue with longevity in this industry?
Got to change with the times. And I said that when we first started, when you said about the mixtape thing. Mm-hmm. You can't, you know, somebody may come to me and say that new me, yo, Kev, I want you to get on the tape and scratch up Let's Dance to the Drummer's Beat. She probably don't even know what that is.
I do.
Oh, my bad.
He's a hip-hop head.
She said, don't disrespect me. A lot of people, they're like, what is that? What are you talking about? So you have to, I'm not saying you can't keep the art form true to itself, but you got to be able to change with the times. You can't do, like, I can't come in here and wear gabardine pants and big bifocals and...
Right. It's like keeping up with technology. You can't be doing things.
I mean, you can.
You have to know what's going on.
I mean, I can, but I won't.
You have to know what's going on today.
But I won't.
Let me ask you this. So I know, as far as your finances, right, when did you realize, okay, I got to make sure that I'm prepared? Because like we were talking about earlier, DJs and people in general just not being prepared for in case there's an emergency, something happens. I know a lot of times people get into financial distress because of it could be medical bills. It could be unexpected situations. And we all want to be thinking about our future and one day being able to comfortably retire or having our money make money. When did you get into that mindset?
What million was it?
See, here we go. I didn't say that. You said that. This is the millionaire right here. Anyway, let me tell you what it is. I'm going to be very, very honest with you. And I know Charlamagne, he's good for getting people to say what you want to say. I'm going to say this without saying it. There's a lot of DJs that I've saw and see now that they're just not living right.
All right.
Like they have to DJ clubs to pay their bills. And I don't mean any, I'm talking about smaller DJs. Mm-hmm. Like, or they like, yo, cause like they're trying to do all these clubs and make, you know, money.
Bigger DJs too though.
I'm sorry.
That's a bigger DJs too.
Right. Really?
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't know. But I'm just saying like, And I'm being honest, I see it all the time. And I saw it, and I'm pretty sure that you can relate to this. Back, I say in 2002, I was getting like maybe $1,500 a night in clubs in Philly. Of course, y'all was getting way more money because mm-hmm. New York's a different market. But it went from $1,500 a night, now you can get a DJ for $200.
Right.
I saw that coming. So I said to myself, I don't want to be in that position where I got to depend on a club to make the money or to live a decent lifestyle, to be able to pay bills and have, you know, that my biggest thing is that and life insurance. That's all I care about.
Mm-hmm.
All
right.
That's all I care about.
When did you get life insurance?
I got life insurance when I was 30, maybe one.
Okay.
Yeah, 31.
Because I just did it like 5 years ago.
Why?
I know. I mean,
I know why. Because, you know, I mean, people think when they're up, they don't really think about that.
I think for me, it's because I also don't have kids, and I know that's a big thing that people sometimes think about. That like, it's more, it felt more urgent, you know, if I would have had like kids, that I wanted to make sure that if something happened to me, that they were good. But you know, it was a learning process for me. There's a lot of other things that I've done to try to set myself up for later, but that was something that I had to, you know, figure out last. I was late to the party.
Yeah, see, for me, it was early. You know, I bought my life insurance policy when I was 21, 22.
Wow.
But I also bought my first crib at 22.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's also in the knowledge, right? So, you know, my parents were always into, the first thing my parents would say, you got to buy a house. So that always stuck with me. You have to have life insurance. That always stuck with me. So at 21, when I got my first check, 21, 22, I had life insurance already, you know, to the point where it's, you know, it matured. The one that I got from my mom matured, I think, like a couple of years ago. And, you know, I got another one. And I bought my first house at 22. So when a lot of people were doing this, that, and the other and spending money to buy cars and jewelry and this, that, and the other, my mom's first thing was, you can do that, but buy a house first. Mm. Have a place to stay. Make sure if you do die, your kids will be okay. So, you know, every time I purchased mm-hmm. a house, what I did was I always got a life insurance policy to take care of that property, that if I do die, I know that my kids are good. Until I, you know, but then I started making investments, and I know that they you know, the money works for itself. But that's what I tell everybody, every DJ out there. If a DJ knows me, the first thing I do is I help them get a house, right? Whether it's Spin King or Hollywood or any of the DJs out there.
Hey, you put them on blast though, like.
No, Spin's my guy. Like I'm the one that got a realtor to take him out to get right. the crib, because I'm serious about it. And every time I used to see Spin King buy a chain or a car or whatever, and Spin King's my brother, I would yell at him, yo, bro, what are you doing? Just like Clue would yell at me, because we have to hold each other accountable. Clue's my brother. Like, he calls him my
father.
That's
your daddy.
See?
That's his daddy.
I'll take it
because he taught me everything about this industry. And that's the same that I try to teach these other DJs, so I'm glad you're doing the same, but we need to start.
It's just all about information, because, I mean, like, I've had life insurance for a while. Like, you know, my wife got it, my kid got it, but it's just like, it's all, somebody had to tell us.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? That's all it is.
That's what I was going to say.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my dad always taught me about credit, but he never told me how to get good credit. See, a lot of times people are misled. They don't understand. Like, they're not informed. You can say, oh, man, you got to do such and such and such, but you're not telling me how to get that.
Mm-hmm.
So where you were, but where you were you, did your dad and mom sit down and tell you, well,
no.
This is how to do such
no.
and such?
No, I learned financial literacy in my adult life. Yeah,
same
no.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I got life insurance at 31, because mm-hmm. He always told me about it, but he didn't say of the importance of getting it. You know what I mean? Same thing with, like I said, with just being financially stable later in life. And, you know, that's why.
I only got it because I did a podcast with State Farm. And so they did bring somebody up that does like life insurance policies. And I was like, damn, I need to get some life insurance. I can't, you know, talk about other things. And then I don't have everything that I should have together.
Go, Rabu. Go.
No, I'm sitting here listening. I'm listening and learning. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. And like you said, you got to use 21. And like you, my parents didn't. I didn't learn financial literacy until I joined Network Marketing back mm-hmm. in the day, a company called Prepaid Legal Services. I'm traveling and learning with them. And for 20 plus years, like when I met my wife, I mean, Sherry, shout out to Sherry. That's Kev's best
Sherry,
friend.
What up?
When I met my wife, I didn't have a checkbook. And I graduated Rutgers with 2 degrees.
Wow.
You know, but I didn't have a checkbook. You know, my credit was jacked up because my grandmother, may she rest in peace. You know, when you're in college, you get that credit card. Mm-hmm. She's like, baby, send me one of them home.
Right.
So I sent her like 4 credit cards. So my credit was jacked by the time I graduated school. And so when I met my wife, she's like, you don't have a checkbook? I was like, no, I'm going to check cashing place. And that's just what it was. I'm from Norton, New Jersey. You know, now I've traveled the world, but in the beginning, it was real. And so we got life insurance early on because we got it through our job. And then we ended up getting some policies afterwards. But, you know, and our life insurance is our safe. It's not our safe haven. It's a decent policy, whatever. But we make way more money than that. That'll secure our future and maybe 2 generations from here if they're not crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, me and Kev hooked up because I started a little social club just to keep financial literacy fun. Because mm-hmm. a lot of times it's not fun.
Right.
And when I used to make money, and I did okay for myself, I would try to put people on, teach them financial literacy. It'd go one in and out the other because people don't want to talk about money
until
for whatever reason.
Until they see the end result.
Absolutely.
They don't want to talk about it until they see the house, the car, the jewelry, something else that they'd be like, there's no way that you can make that doing your regular job.
And sometimes people feel ashamed, too, if they're not in a good financial space.
Right.
It's hard to talk about it if you're embarrassed that you haven't made, you know, better financial decisions or that you just don't know.
Absolutely. And the biggest thing is just not knowing.
Mm-hmm.
But you're saying the end result. So Kev and I hooked up because he has a friend named Sherry, and I started a social club in the middle of the pandemic, May 28th, 2020. And I was in sales for so long, and I had to travel so much. You know, I coached basketball with my daughter, and I subbed at a school just to get back, but I was never home. And so I said, I'm never selling anything again in my life, ever. And I said, if I can't make money on my money, I'm not doing it. And I'm not knocking people in sales or whatever. I love them. God bless them. Whatever you love, that's great. But when Kev hooked up, I was like, yo, man, I got this social club. It's like 20,000 of us at this point, all around the world, and I'm helping people make money through different investments. However, I never give financial advice, ever. You know, it's against the law. So I said, Kev, yo, could I get on the radio, you know, so on and so forth, and that'll be more advertisement just to get people to join our group.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't sell anything, so I have no products to sell, no services to sell, we don't sell education either. We just give it away. And so Kev, you know, we connected, and then we start doing some concerts. We did a concert with Jadakiss and Jim Jones. We gave away a brand new Mercedes, and people saw that. There's, like you said, they saw the end result. It's like, dang, what are y'all doing? Then we did one with Cardi B recently. That went decent. I started doing stuff with Clear Vision out of Philly. Mm-hmm. My man Jock from Flo Vodka, he's from Cleveland. We started doing celebrity softball games. We did a big one with Jalen Hurts. We did one with Baker Mayfield. And so I start doing these events so people can see that we're real.
Because
mm-hmm. they believe this.
Right.
They don't believe the cat mm-hmm. that they knew from Newark. They believe this. And so, and I sponsor these events. You never make any money by calling sponsorship. However, we're becoming a household name.
Mm-hmm.
So we show people, like, hey, we find little things that in our social club, we're like a cigar bar. Or you going down and chilling at your spot where you and your friends just kicking it. And that's all we do. And you may come in, he's like, yo, man, I found a way we can make some money. We're going to run it through the channels. If it's legal, you know, we got 4 feds in our board. you know, a judge on our board. So if it's legal, if it makes sense, if it aligns with our integrity, we're going to put it out there. And people join these little platforms all around the world. They make anywhere between, we hate to throw numbers, but 20.
Man, talk your talk. Come on, man. Stop being, talk your talk.
Sometimes they make 20 to 80% a month on their money and it compounds. Mm. And we've helped people make millions of dollars in the last 2 years. And we started 2 years ago. And it's a lovely thing, man. Like, one of my boys, he's sitting out there. He's a decorated state trooper in New Jersey, one of the best ones, internal affairs. And he loves the fact that, you know, in the next, like, week or so, he'll be able to pay off his mortgage.
Right.
And so we started doing this. Well, I met Kev, I got published in Forbes. And I came up with this thing called the Rob Bugatti one-third rule. And the reason why I came up with it, because my wife and I was arguing. Because we was broke. We was in foreclosure for years. Because we bit off too much so we could chew. We moved into one of them 5,500 square foot homes in the neighborhood. We couldn't pay for the lights. You know, because during the time when you could get a mortgage.
No money down.
No doc, bro.
No doc loan.
No doc. So that was us. We was young.
You know, and my interest rates during that time was 17%?
Bro, think about it.
Mm. Busta Rhymes hooked me up with that guy. It was like, no doc, get it. I got in that shit. That shit was 17%.
Bruh.
My credit now is less now than I paid back then, which was about what?
What?
10 years ago? Well, no, about 15 years ago?
Yeah. That's it crazy. Was crazy.
But I didn't know. He didn't know either.
We didn't know either. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we it was our second home because we lived in Newark and we got a rebates and all that stuff. We got our first home, FHA and stuff. But this one, same thing. Thing ballooned. Bro, we was in foreclosure for 5 years.
I was DJing bar mitzvahs. I was DJing bar mitzvahs, not to go in foreclosure. Bar mitzvahs, quinceañeras,
really?
All that.
But
this was what, in 2003, 2005?
This was eight for us.
Yeah, about 2005. Yeah, 2008, around that time.
And at the time in Jersey, we paid everything else for the mortgage. And I was like, baby, they come get this bad boy. Because at the time, they weren't taking houses.
Right.
You know, thank God. Mm-mm. They weren't taking houses.
Yeah,
so.
I didn't know you could be in foreclosure for 5 years.
Yo, we did
it. Not now.
Not now. They
get you in a week.
Back then, that's when the market fell. And,
right.
And at the time, I had 3-4 houses at the time because I was flipping and I got caught with that too. But I was DJing everything. I was like, I ain't losing this shit. But
and I'm working everything you could possibly imagine. I co-authored a book. We sold 50,000 copies. You know, I'm trying to get it, but it wasn't enough.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you know, when I started playing with these little investment things, the crypto world started to blow up, right? And I started to see my friends get destroyed buying tokens. They're going down, trying to sell them, and they start losing money. And I was like, no, we're not going to do any token stuff either. But what we're going to do, we're going to use the crypto world uh-huh. as currency. Mm-hmm. But we're not trying to buy something like you go to Atlantic City, buy something and hold on to it, and hopefully it appreciates, mm-hmm. which that's not knocking it. But bro, what started to happen is, you know, I put Kev on one of the platforms. And Kev will tell you right now, like, and I don't name drop because you're not supposed to do that. He gets shout out to everybody. I don't name drop, but you could. It's A-list artists and athletes that play with us. But we started with cats like Camden, New Jersey. So once I start getting on and we start educating people on how to do this simple, I say, I call two of my boys in Camden. And I get excited when I talk about this. I call two of my boys in Camden and say, yo, I'm going to put y'all on. Y'all take it to the streets. Camden don't even have a police force anymore.
What?
Their crime is some of the lowest that they've ever had.
Yeah, I remember that was a huge
Camden
story.
Camden don't have a police force?
No, they have sheriffs now. They don't even have a police force. But the crime is so low because everybody eating.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
When Cass is eating, they ain't busting people over the head.
That's a that is a fact.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't understand when people have these conversations about police reform. When we have these conversations about defunding the police, that's what they're saying. Let's take some of this billions of dollars y'all are putting in police forces and put them in the community. Provide resources for people. Yeah, build trade schools. Teach people a trade. Like.
Right, exactly. And so what we started to do, because traditionally, and I'm African-American, traditionally for African-Americans, we don't learn the investment game. Until it's late, if we learn it at all.
Right.
And so we had to be real soft about it because, again, you don't want to tell people to put their money. But what we start to do, we start helping people make so much money, and we start buying them these rings. You get a $13,000 ring when you make money for you and your family. You don't have to sell anything. You don't have to show up for anything. You make your money, and your family start making money. You show me what you've done, and we reward you with this ring. So all these people start getting these rings. Everybody else like, I want the ring to show me stuff.
Mm.
We have hundreds of people right now with this ring on their finger. And when I put out the one-third rule, and I'll stop after this, what have you. When I put out the one-third rule, my wife and I was arguing. Because being in foreclosure and not having any money, when you start making some money, she won't put anything in the savings account because she's thinking this might happen again. Mm-hmm. And I was like, babe, we can't put anything in the savings account. We got to make it make money for us. So I said, let's come to an agreement. I said, whatever we make, we'll take a third of it and pay debt. So we paid our mortgage off, student loans, credit cards, everything gone. Then we'll take another third, reinvest it. We'll take that last third, cut it in half, put 50 cents aside for taxes. Mm-hmm. And then another third, go shop. Have you some instant gratification. That has changed the lives of over 300,000 people. Mm-hmm. Our folks don't have any car notes. Mm-hmm. They don't have any mortgages. They don't have any credit cards. They're making money. And so me and Kev was talking. He's like, yo, the industry cats need to hear this because people love what they do. Y'all love what y'all do. I know y'all love what y'all do. But sometimes you want to get off the elevator. Or you want to be able to get off the elevator at one time and not have to work forever. And so that's what we do. People, we play a little small investments. Some are very conservative. And it's killing the game. But we don't just, we do mortgage notes. We do Amazon stores. We do Forex. We do crypto. We keep it all spread out. Because if an industry falls and we only invest in one thing, we all dead.
Diversity.
Hold on, Paul. I'm sorry. I have to exit. But Kev, I need you to come up here by yourself. Rabu, I love what you're doing.
Oh,
I don't mean it like that.
No, it's all
like,
good.
I love the information you're providing. Kev, I want you to come up here by yourself so we can have a different conversation another time.
Okay.
But Rabu, thank you.
Nah, thank you, bro.
They know I got to leave.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Appreciate y'all.
Nah.
But for people that do want to get involved, give them the information so they can definitely check it out.
Oh, yes, sir. It's UIGISCmedia.com.
UIGI. What does that stand for?
UIGI. UIGI Social Club. So it's okay. UIGISC Media.com.
Okay.
UIGISCmedia.com.
Yeah,
what does that stand for?
United Investment Group International.
It stands for United Investment Group International, but we removed the word investment again by advice from our attorneys. Because we never want to.
We don't give investment advice.
Exactly. Okay. At all.
Well, we appreciate you guys for coming back. And Kev, like you said, we got to get you back up here because I really want to get into what you do as a DJ, right? Mm-hmm. And the reason I say that is a lot of times we don't appreciate the DJ, right?
Oh, all the time.
And especially DJs who've had their foot in this game for a long time. And there's not too many that are still on radio.
Right.
Whether it's you, the guy down the corner, Master Flex or Felly Fell or Greg Street. We don't appreciate those guys enough because you guys had a huge influence on not just younger kids, but also, you know, DJs that have made it. You know what I mean? Because if it wasn't for you, if it wasn't for Flex, if it wasn't for Greg Street, there would be no me. You know what I mean? I grew up listening to you guys. I grew up, you know, respecting you guys. You guys have had me on your show, and, you guys continue to give me advice on different things. And
I still got my Envy vinyl, by the way, but that's not.
You see mine right there? I still got mine. And, you know, we always appreciate that because a lot of times we don't. And I'm glad you're doing this for people in industry because I do this for the DJs because I'll be honest with you. I really don't give a fuck about too many people but the DJs. And the reason is I noticed how hard it was, how difficult it is, how, you know, Kev could DJ a party, you know, back in the day and it'd be 4,000 people and then they try to say, here's $1,000.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And I really encourage DJs and even Angela Yee, we both encourage people to own their own. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, that's why I started my own car show. I pay for everything. Houston car show was $162,000 for me to do, but I did it.
I was going to come to yours, but God has blessed us. We got a couple of Lambos.
Yeah.
And my boy Reg from BBS Boys.
Okay.
That's my man.
That's the homie.
He's like, yo, come to the thing. But we had an event at my house, and Doughboy, DJ Doughboy,
yep.
He DJed my party. So.
Shout out to Doughboy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. But so, you know, I always encourage people to, you know, cars and jewelry is good, but we have to start keeping our own. And, you know, and that's why I'm always great, and I always, like with Camilo, who owns his own couple of restaurants, I love it. With Self, that owns his own restaurant. You know, Angela Yee owns a hair store, a coffee shop, a juice bar.
I have a credit building platform too called Stellify.
A bunch of that. So it's like I encourage that so much and we try to promote that. And I love to see DJs doing, whether it's Quicksilver with the DJ Academy or it's so many different DJs with so many different things. I don't want to not mention one of them, but, you know, I really encourage it. So I like to see it because, you know, and I appreciate what you guys are doing. And we'll see you next time on the come up. We'll see you next time so we can talk more about, you know,
definitely
your influence on this game.
Definitely.
All right. Well, it's the Breakfast Club. It's Cosmic Kev, Rabu, Gary. Did I say it right?
Yes, sir.
It's the Breakfast Club. Good morning.
The hit movie Bob Marley, One Love, is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Celebrate the life and music of an icon who inspired generations through his message of love, peace, and unity. If you missed Bob Marley, One Love in the theaters, now's your chance to watch at home. Stream the hit movie now on Paramount Plus, rated PG-13. Head to ParamountPlus.com/OneLove to try it free now.
Ladies and gentlemen,
we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Hey, it's me, Blippi, and this is my best friend, Mika.
Hi, I'm Mika, and this is our brand new podcast,
Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. The Blippi-mobile will take us to amazing places.
And we'll meet new friends along the way.
Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast, and I had the opportunity to talk to one of Hollywood's major icons, Michael B. Jordan. In our conversation, Michael shares the highs, the lows, and everything in between, offering a genuine glimpse into his world.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. People give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.